There we go. Now, good morning. And welcome to the meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. I'm calling the meeting to order. We will start by having the clerk take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon, Vice Chair. Representative Franson. Representative Bonner. Representative Damuth. Representative Heinzman.
Here.
Representative Morrison.
Here.
Representative Pryor.
Here.
Representative Wasilik. Representative West.
Okay, so we do not yet have a quorum. When we get one, we will have a motion to approve the minutes. So members, we're continuing our briefings from agencies, and today we're going to be diving in to the Parent Aware system and getting a briefing from the agency regarding that from the Department of Human Services, since it connects to a number of the issues that we're looking at as a committee. And so if we can have our testifiers, whoever wants to begin, introduce yourself, say your name for the record, and then please begin with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deb Swenson-Klatt. I am the Manager of Child Development Services at the Department of Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to do a deeper dive into Parent Aware. I'm here today with my colleague, Nara Topp, and we, again, appreciate the opportunity to return to the committee to provide this overview of Parent Aware. During my presentation to you on January 29th, I shared some high-level information about Parent Aware as part of our overview of the Child Care Development Grant programs. Today, we will walk through these topics around Parent Aware with both myself and Ms. Topp presenting. So we'll share a little bit of background about quality rating and improvement systems and how Parent Aware is a part of a national movement in states across the country. We'll share information about which programs are eligible to participate in Parent Aware, how early childhood and child care programs earn star ratings, how child care programs in particular are supported to improve in Parent Aware, how many programs and children are served, and information about recent changes made to Parent Aware will also touch a little bit, and I hope we'll be able to show you a demo of our parentaware.org website.
And Ms. Wisenclad, could you pull the microphone just a little closer? It's a little bit hard to hear you.
Or maybe adjust
your chair. All right, whatever works.
I have a soft voice. Thank you.
Okay.
All
good.
Right.
Please proceed.
Just want to take a minute to orient you to packets we think are in your materials for today. We have, in addition to the copy of the PowerPoint slide, we have some handouts that are designed for both parents and for providers that include understanding the star ratings, let your stars shine, and written in the stars. You can see a little bit about our branding for this program in those titles. And then there's a set of fact sheets with some data that I'll touch on at the end of the presentation. In general, quality rating and improvement systems, or QRIS, are systematic approaches to assess, improve, and communicate, and improve child care quality and early childhood education. We'll be touching on each of these purposes as we move through the presentation today. On the bottom of this slide is a link to a helpful resource guide maintained by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Child Care. So if you want to know more about QRIS in general and across the country, would invite you to go to that link. I mentioned a national movement in QRIS. Indeed, the Federal Child Care Development Block Grant, reauthorized in 2014, requires states to in some way measure program quality and then display that information on an easy-to-access consumer education website. QRIS, as you can see on this map with the blue states, is the most common approach that states use to meet this requirement. This is a 2017 map at the most current we can access. You'll see that there are 42 states that are either piloting or have a quality rating and improvement system. In that year, actually today, there are 45 states we checked recently that are, again, piloting or fully implementing QRIS.
Ms. Swenson-Clad, what did the other states do, just out of curiosity?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
we can get that information for you if you're
yeah,
interested.
I mean, clearly the vast majority are using this, but just, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Parent Aware is Minnesota's quality rating and improvement system. It provides a set of standards and indicators that are also known as kindergarten readiness best practices. They are a way of communicating the things that programs can do to help children become ready for school and life. These standards are based in research and are the basis for explaining how the practices help children learn important skills and abilities. Having these measures in a rating system allows Parent Aware to recognize and reward programs when they use these practices. And we'll talk a bit more about this as we proceed, but Parent Aware has fairly rapidly become a critical part of Minnesota's early care and education infrastructure. And I'll explain a little bit about that, those linkages in this next slide. So two critical supports that help low-income children access high-quality early care and education are linked to Parent Aware ratings, and I know this committee has already heard quite a bit about these. Early learning scholarships require parents, with scholarships to use a Parent Aware Star rated program. A point of note here is that beginning July 1, 2020, a statutory change will go into effect limiting the use of scholarships to only programs with a 3 or 4 star rating. We have a 4 star rating system in place in Minnesota. Right now, however, a parent can bring their early learning scholarship to a program that's officially joined Parent Aware and is getting ready to be rated or has any star rating level, star 1, 2, 3, or 4. But that will change in a little over a year from now. Another important linkage is with the Child Care Assistance Program, which, as you also heard a few weeks back, provides a higher reimbursement rate for a couple of different reasons, one of which is a 3 or 4 star rating held by the program. So if a program holds a 3 star rating, the reimbursement rate is 15% higher for families choosing that rated that level of a rating, and 20% higher for families using a 4 star rated program. Because of these linkages in law, parents really now depend on the availability of star ratings to find quality programs. We thought a little bit of history about Parent Aware would be helpful because this is a relatively new program. Indeed, actually, Minnesota started thinking about quality rating and improvement systems for child care and early education as far back as 2004. A pilot, though, funded through a public-private partnership with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, began in 2007 and ran through 2011 in several communities in Minnesota. DHS then rolled out Parent Aware in 2012, gradually expanding the program statewide by 2015 with a combination of funding from the federal Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant, along with Child Care Development Block Grant funds and some private funds. For states like Minnesota that were awarded a Race to the Top grant, a QRIS was actually a required component of that grant for all states who received that federal award. And the grant pushed states to grow and strengthen their QRIS, in part through requiring that we complete a validation study, which we'll talk about with you in a little bit. Parent Aware used the results of that study to inform improvements in the initiative, and we'll also touch on those. Just over time, across these phases, a pilot, a 2012 to 2015 expansion, and then the update that's mentioned here on the slide in 2016 to the Parent Aware initiative, We have worked diligently to seek input from providers, from the public, and from stakeholders. And as I noted on January 29th, we have now a state general fund appropriation supporting Parent Aware, in addition to using our federal child care development block grant funds to continue the funding at about the level that it was when the Race to the Top grant ended.
Ms. Swenson-Cladd, Representative Pryor has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry for the interruption, but I realized I missed what QRIS stands for. So if you could give me...
Mr. Chair, Representative, apologies. QRIS stands for Quality Rating and Improvement Systems.
Ms. Swenson-Cladd, as I understand it, that map we saw before with the 40-some states, they all have some version of a quality rating and improvement system. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and representatives, yes, that is correct. And there are some distinct differences that we can describe to you if you're interested in that information.
Maybe if just, I don't know if now's the right place or if you'll do it later, maybe just really briefly you can give a sense of that
sure.
Range.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one variation across the country is in the degree to which a quality rating and improvement system might be voluntary or required. So Minnesota, as Ms. Topp will describe, has a voluntary system. Child care and early care and education programs are not required to participate. Another variation might be the way in which QRIS are linked to other public programs like CCAP. In some states, CCAP participate. Serving children in the CCAP program requires that a program hold a rating. There are different variations in terms of the measures of quality used across the country and the way in which the ratings are structured to support programs. And finally, the other that comes to mind for me is differences in the ways in which states support programs moving through a rating system, a rating and improvement system. That I in QRIS is to varying degrees emphasized more in some states than in others. In Minnesota, I would say we quite heavily emphasize the improvement supports. So again, we'll touch more on that as we go.
Thank you.
So stepping back a little bit to this fundamental question of why quality care and education is important, this question is indeed foundational for quality rating and improvement systems like Parent Aware and other public programs linked to it. Early care and education is necessary for two reasons, to provide parents, provide care so parents can work and certainly to help children prepare for school and for life. When care and education is of quality, it provides peace of mind for parents so they can go to work. It provides children with a strong foundation on which to build new skills, which can jumpstart their learning to develop more complex skills and subjects as they grow older. Fundamentally, the quality of early care and education matters, beginning in the earliest ages that children might be in care and education settings. And I know the research that you heard from Dr. Megan Gunner at the beginning of your committee's efforts this session provided some compelling evidence of this. Minnesota is facing two big challenges some of the two big challenges that Minnesota is facing are that we are experiencing a child care shortage, as I know you know, and this is the case in most other states across the country. There's a gap between the sheer number of child care spaces available and the supply of child care, and that is a concern for all of us. When you consider whether the care available is of quality or is available in the type of care that parents prefer, such as infant-toddler care, the gap might be even greater. We also, though, have an additional gap in terms of achievement. We have one of the largest in the nation achievement gaps that show up in gaps between children who are Black, Hispanic, and Native American compared to white children, and between low-income children and children from higher-income families. And achievement gaps, we've learned are at least in part caused by gaps in educational opportunity. those gaps themselves can be addressed by the increasing the availability of the quality of early care and education. And so DHS is working, trying to do our part to contribute to this, to addressing these gaps through Parent Aware as a key strategy. As programs start up, they can do so with Parent Aware best practices in mind. They are able to access supports from our partners and grantees, including the Child Care Aware System, the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, and First Children's Finance, some of the grantees I talked about on January 29th. And once licensed, they become eligible for supports through Parent Aware. We have found these supports to be a stabilizing force, helping to retain the quality child care programs. Parent Aware helps close the gap, the opportunity gap for low-income children and children of color by improving access to quality early learning opportunities. It provides information to parents to help them choose quality programs, and because of the linkages between Parent Aware and the Early Learning Scholarship Program and CCAP, it enables low-income families to access quality programs. We also hope that it's improving the quality of programs overall so that all Minnesota children who are in these settings have access to quality experiences.
We have a question, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could, if I can ask at this point, and I don't know the answer to this, I probably should, but at this point, you know, you talked about these are research-based and that they've shown to be successful and valuable to children's development. Do we continue to assess that right now so that if a child receiving CCAP that's in a Parent Aware program, do we follow that child to know that actually the results that we expect to see, we are seeing?
Ms. Winston-Clatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, we will talk in a few minutes about the validation study we conducted in 2016, which did indeed look at the progress children made in Parent Aware rated programs. So we'll touch on this subject in a few minutes.
Okay. Please continue.
I'm actually, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, going to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Ms. Topp, at this point.
Okay. Ms. Topp, please continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you, Deb. As Ms. Swenson-Klatt mentioned, my name is Nara Topp. I'm a supervisor at the Department of Human Services on the Child Development Services team. Let's see. So I'm going to share with you some information about what programs are eligible to participate in Parent Aware, how programs earn ratings, how child care programs are supported through the rating process, the improvement part of Parent Aware, some recent changes that have been made to Parent Aware. And then I'll also hopefully do a demo of our website for parents. So, and then I'll turn it back over to Ms. Swenson-Klatt. So first, the question, who is eligible for Parent Aware? The simple answer is programs. Programs are eligible for Parent Aware, and there's different types of programs that are eligible for Parent Aware. The idea that Parent Aware is based on is that quality can look different across different settings. So you can see on the screen there are five different eligible program types for Parent Aware. All of them meet health and safety standards. All of them serve children 0 to 5. And as a reminder, our program, Parent Aware, is voluntary. So licensed child care centers that are licensed by the Department of Human Services are eligible. Licensed family child care providers that are licensed by tribes and counties are eligible. Public school pre-kindergarten programs that meet statutory requirements in school readiness and voluntary pre-K. Head Start programs, which meet federal Head Start regulations. And then this other category of programs that are in partnership with each other across those five types. As Ms. Swenson-Klatt mentioned, Minnesota's system is voluntary, and an example of a state that links its quality rating system to child care assistance, or child care subsidy, as our neighbor Wisconsin. So in order to receive subsidy in Wisconsin, programs must participate in their quality rating and improvement system. But that is not the case in Minnesota. In Minnesota, it is voluntary, and we encourage programs to participate, and we provide incentives to attract them to Parent Aware and help them improve their quality so that children can benefit.
And Representative Pryor has a question.
Thank you. So do we know of all the licensed centers and child care homes, what percentage of them use Parent Aware, are qualified for Parent Aware?
Yes. Ms. Topp.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do know, and we will share that information at the end of our presentation, if that's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Please continue.
Mr. Chair and the committee, I will move on to the next question, which is, how do programs earn their ratings? So I guess simply stated, programs submit examples of how they use kindergarten readiness best practices, or this could be referred to as documentation. These examples are reviewed by a team of reliable raters. Some classrooms in child care centers, preschool classrooms specifically, receive an on-site observation by a trained observer from the University of Minnesota. They use a tool called the CLASS tool, which is the Classroom Assessment and Scoring System, which takes a look at child-adult interactions, and those observers are also reliable. The examples are submitted across three categories that are illustrated in this house that you see on the screen in five different categories. So I'll just talk through what these categories are. One category is teaching and relationships with children. That's the red panel in the house. Another category is relationships with families. And these are categories of best practices. The third category is assessment and planning for each individual child. And then the walls of the house, the purple walls, are professionalism, and that's where a lot of the training requirements are included. And then at the very base of Parent Aware are health and well-being practices. So while Parent Aware uses a common set of standards and indicators, it's not a checklist or a one-size-fits-all approach. It's a flexible framework that encourages innovation, creativity, and continuous quality improvement. As I said at the beginning of my remarks, we recognize that quality child care can and does look different across settings to meet the unique needs of families. So on the flexibility theme, we recognize that some programs already meet quality standards. So as a result, we have created four different pathways in Parent Aware. There's a full pathway, and I'll explain that more in a little bit, for non-accredited licensed childcare programs. And then there are three other pathways, an accelerated pathway for accredited childcare and licensed, or accredited licensed childcare and pre-K programs that meet school readiness standards, an automatic pathway for voluntary pre-kindergarten programs and Head Start programs, and an expedited pathway that is for child care centers that are already rated, decide they want to open a new center with an experienced director. So those are the four pathways. I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about the full rating pathway. That is a 1-4 star rating pathway. And in your handouts, you will see there's a two-sided document for parents that's called Understanding the Star Ratings. And this is a piece, as I said, for families that helps explain what programs do at each of the rating levels. So as you can see here, this is just some explanation of the structure. At the 1 and 2 star levels, programs must meet all requirements that are laid out in Parent Aware across five categories. At the higher levels, at 3 and 4, programs have a choice on how they meet the requirements. So they must meet all of the 1 and 2 star requirements, and then they have a menu of choices across the 5 categories to assemble the best practices that they use in their programs, send in examples, and achieve either a 3 or 4 star rating. Importantly, programs choose their goal rating, and they set an intention and make a choice on what rating they would like to earn, and then I'll talk a little bit more about how they work with a coach to achieve that rating. Importantly, training and education are part of the rating system. That information is submitted by the individuals in programs, and it's tracked electronically in a data system called Develop. Programs can also use the developed data system to submit their evidence. They can also send their evidence in by the mail, or they can do a little of both. So programs can choose how they want to submit their examples of how they use best practices. So here's some information about the improvement part of our quality rating and improvement system. So we offer both coaching and training for providers. In addition to training, we offer professional development advising. So programs and their staff have access to an advisor that can help them set professional development goals and chart a path forward. We also offer quality coaching to support programs as they go through the rating process. And then there are choices about how much coaching a program wants. So a program that really is interested in receiving a lot of support can opt into a 6-month cycle of coaching or a 12-month cycle of coaching. And then after they complete that coaching cycle, they receive $1,000 to help them improve their quality for their rating. After they go through this coaching process that we call building quality, they move on to submit examples of their best practices over 6 months, also with the support of a coach, up to 15 hours. They submit their examples or their documentation, and then after they receive a rating of a 1, 2, or 3 star, programs receive either $2,500 or $3,500. Also, they will spend to help them get ready for their next rating. I should mention the $3,500 is currently centers in high poverty counties can receive the $3,500. So I will direct you to another handout that's called Let Your Star Shine that I think does a nice job of laying out the program benefits. As we've mentioned a number of times, because ParentAware is voluntary, we offer a number of supports and incentives for programs to participate. So I am going to take a moment and hopefully do a demo now, switch gears a little bit, and talk about how we share information about ratings with parents. So I am going to launch a website.
Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, so here it is. So, oh, make my screen full. Yeah. How do I do that again? The big square. Okay. Okay, so we, so as Ms. Swenson-Klatt mentioned, part of what a quality rating system does is it communicates ratings to parents. The main vehicle that we use to do that in Minnesota is this website called ParentAware.org. One of the things that makes ParentAware unique nationally is that we really have a strong focus on parents. In fact, it is the only quality rating system and improvement system that has parents as part of its name. Another thing that's unique about the website is that it was launched in partnership with both philanthropy and business. And then Also, the federal government through CCDF requires that states have a consumer-facing website, so parentaware.org is our consumer-facing website. Last year it had 86,000 unique visitors, and of those, and from a survey in 2015, of those who visited the website, 95% found it helpful and 84% found it easy to use. So now I'm going to just demonstrate how it works. So I am going to look for childcare, and I just am going to pretend that I have an infant and I work in the state office building. And I want to find a program that's near my work, which we know many parents choose proximity, want a program in proximity to their workplace. So I type in the address, and the search results in 499 programs. So that's a lot to start with. So parents can go narrow their search on this left navigation bar. So I will choose that I really would like to have a family childcare provider, which then narrows the search down to 250 programs, and I would like it to be 5 miles away, no more than 5 miles away. And I would like to know that infants are served in this program. So then that begins to narrow the search. And I can scroll through here. The connection's a little slow. So then you get a list of 200 or so programs that are within 5 miles from this location. If a parent wants more information, they can, we have a newly launched feature where they can chat with someone. They can also call a phone number and talk to a live person, or go back to the website and go to this Learn tab where we have lots of information, including a parent toolkit and other information for parents who are shopping for childcare. Another way you could get to the website is just to go to Google and type in Parent Aware, and it does come up as the first thing.
We have a question,
sure.
Representative Pryor.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you said, for instance, they accept infants, does that mean that they're currently accepting infants or that they in general?
That is a very good question. It means that they can accept infants. They're licensed to accept infants.
Okay. So, Representative Pryor.
So then I imagine that, thank you, Mr. Chair, a great deal of the search is, I have a baby, would you accept an infant at this time?
Ms. Stapp.
Okay. Yes. So, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and the committee, and representative. Yes, they would, parents would contact the programs to find out about availability.
Okay. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, in the committee. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears again and talk a little bit about recent changes made to Parent Aware.
Yeah, Ms. Topp, as you're doing that,
I had
a question. I'm not seeing the rest of the presentation, and your mentioning of infants made me think of this. Can you just give a sense? I think that for many of us, we might have a gut sense as to what sorts of best practices there might be in terms of preschoolers. But when you reference infants, can you just give a sense as to, because there aren't really examples, could you give a sense of like what might we see in a program that is, let's say, 4-star rated or 1-star rated, or when it comes to serving infants, for example?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so parent aware best practices do include practices for infants and toddlers. Two examples that come to mind are the two categories that come to mind are teaching and relationships with children and assessment and planning for each individual child. So two of the indicators at the one-star level require things like consistent use of routines, which is very important for children, child observation, documentation of growth for supporting an individual child's development at all star levels, lesson plans that align with our state standards, which are called the early childhood indicators of progress. And so lesson plans is another example. We also, at the higher levels, require use of approved curriculum and assessment tools across all age groups. And we also require programs to use strategies to communicate effectively with parents, which, of course, is very important for all children, and, of course, infants and toddlers, too.
Okay. And Representative Morrison has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Topp. You mentioned the website was launched in a collaboration between philanthropy and the state.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the percentage breakdown, and can you share what philanthropic organizations were involved?
Ms. Topp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't know the financial breakdown on how much was contributed. The primary contributor was an organization that was called Parent Aware for School Readiness, which has sunsetted. They helped launch the website by funding the development of it.
Thank you.
And my understanding in referencing that is that this really has been multidisciplinary, multi-sector, a lot of business organizations coming together and other groups through the years to get to this point. And I understand, I see Ms. Swenson-Clad nodding. Yeah, okay. Okay, so sorry for that tangent, but that was helpful to understand the content a little more of the standards and indicators. So I think you were going to the recent changes to the program then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. So one of the very important concepts in Parent Aware is the idea of continuous quality improvement. You start where you are and you get better over time. That's very foundational to the whole development of the rating tool, the whole way we coach programs, just the whole way that we do business and the way Parent Aware has grown as an initiative. As Ms. Swenson-Clatt mentioned, to the public-private partnership idea, Parent Aware was intentionally started as a pilot to address the fact that in Minnesota, nearly half of all children were arriving at kindergarten unprepared. So the pilot served programs in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Wayzata, Blue Earth, and Nicollet counties. So this allowed us to test and test Parent Aware and make changes to it before Minnesota received Race to the Top, and we launched Parent Aware in 8 counties in 2012. So as Ms. Swenson-Clatt mentioned earlier, the funding from Race to the Top allowed us to launch Parent Aware and roll it out gradually between 2012 and 2015. So Parent Aware ratings became available statewide in January of 2015. So Parent Aware is just about 4 years old in being a statewide program. As we have mentioned, a lot of Parent Aware has been launched in partnerships with foundations and businesses. And during the Race to the Top period, about $12 million was invested outside of government by philanthropic and business partners to help make Parent Aware a success in all 87 counties and 11 tribes. Of that, importantly, $1 million was used to fund an evaluation of Parent Aware. And I'll tell you a little bit about that study. So we had a number of evaluation activities, but a big part and a very important one was something called the Parent Aware Validation Study. It was completed by an outside evaluator to ensure objectivity, and this outside evaluator is called Child Trends. It's a national research institution that has specialized and has special expertise in quality rating and improvement systems. The validation collected data on how ParentAware was operating and how children in ParentAware rated programs were doing. So the purpose of the validation study was to determine if the rating process was fair, accurate, and meaningful. We also went about, so we knew that after the validation study, we were going to remodel Parent Aware. And so we also did a number of other activities to inform that remodel process, and including taking a look at research, talking to national experts, and very importantly, gathering feedback from families, local child care providers, early education programs, and we worked with a group called Voices and Choices for Children as we were determining how the rating tool would change. So we did a public engagement process with over 900 individuals with 7,000 pieces of feedback that included specialized engagement with early educators and families from communities of color, including African American, Somali, Asian, Latino, and American Indian. So here is a little bit more information about what we found, what was found in the validation study. So importantly, all children in Parent Aware programs made gains on critical measures of school readiness, such as literacy and social and emotional skills. Children in 3- and 4-star rated programs made greater gains from fall to spring than children in lower rated programs. And low-income children made greater gains than higher-income children. We also learned that we could still do better, and we could still improve the tool. There's three different ways, main ways, that we could do better. We could look at the standards and indicators and place a stronger emphasis on the practices known to make the biggest difference for children. Could make the rating process more flexible so that programs had different ways to show how they were using best practices. And we could also do a better job of articulating the goal of Parent Aware best practices and why it is so important to Minnesota's children. So as a result, Parent Aware was remodeled. We updated the standards and indicators. They were released in October of 2016, but they didn't go into effect till July of 2017. So programs had an opportunity to know that the changes were coming. Some of the important changes that we made were, again, to the standards and indicators, to the best practices, and we increased flexibility in a number of ways. I spoke to you earlier about the different pathways that we have for Parent Aware that recognize programs that already meet quality standards through another initiative or state law. We added new coaching options, there's a menu of options, a menu of choices for providers when they step forward to join Parent Aware about how much or how little coaching they'd like to receive. We added professional development advising, so each provider could get advice on how to chart a professional development pathway for themselves. And we added more options for ways for programs to demonstrate their quality. We also streamlined professional development requirements around training. And here, I'll do one last handout reference, written in the stars. Explains how the training requirements work for Parent Aware. We also incorporated technology to make registration for training more efficient. And finally, we increased the incentives. So after receiving coaching, the incentive increased from $5,000 to $1,000 if a program chose to participate in building quality and, $500 to $1,000 if a program chose to receive coaching. And then the post-rating incentive was increased to $2,500 for 1, 2, and 3-star rated programs. So with that, I will turn the presentation back to Ms. Swenson-Klatt to provide some data on Parent Aware's growth and reach.
That's fine. Ms. Swenson-Klatt. Except Representative Pryor, pardon me, has a question.
Right. So before we leave that presentation,
yeah,
Mr. Chair, thank you. If you will allow one more question.
No, of course.
So I'm actually very curious when you say that they're, of the practices, mm-hmm. to put emphasis on the practices that seem to be the most effective. Can you highlight some of those things, some of that finding? And then is this something that would be updated based on the findings from this this research that you did?
Ms. Topp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, this has already been updated. The changes that I talked about took effect in July of 2017. The validation study was prior to that. So the validation study informed the changes, informed the indicators, and then informed all of our materials. So that is here. So you can see some of the, at the higher levels, using a curriculum that is aligned with the state standards is, that is a requirement in both 3- and 4-star rated programs. Using an assessment tool that is also aligned to state standards is another best practice. Teaching and relationships with children is very important. The adults and how they interact with children is another important best practice that is measured through the reliable observation it's using a tool called the CLASS tool. That's conducted by the University of Minnesota using reliable observers.
Okay. Well, I think we're going with Ms. Swenson-Klatt now.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I will turn now and wrap up our presentation with some data about the growth and reach of Parent Aware since its start in 2012 as a pilot program. So you have a set of fact sheets that have the same data, in one case in different form. I'll point you to that I'll refer to in these slides. And we'll start with this graph displaying how much Parent Aware has grown from 2012 to 2018. The upward trend is logical, of course, because we have been in the about the business of expanding this program statewide. There is a one of your fact sheets titled Parent Aware Rated Programs by Program Type Over Time. This chart with the numbers has the same data as this line graph in the slide. So if you want a closer look at the numbers by program type, please refer to that graph, and I'd be happy to talk about it. Some highlights here of this growth by program type include that the number of rated programs has grown from 458 center-based programs and 71 childcare programs in 2012 to over 1,600 center-based programs and over 1,000 family childcare programs in 2018. From 2012 to 15, when Parent Aware was being phased in and offered in some counties statewide, there was rapid growth, relatively speaking, in these years across all the program types. And if you remember the different pathways that Ms. Topp described, that programs are eligible for the full rating pathway, the accelerated and automatic ratings. It perhaps is not surprising that the accelerated and automatic ratings generated higher levels of participation for the programs eligible for those pathways. But also note that the number of rated non-accredited child care programs now far exceeds the number of rated public school pre-kindergarten programs, Head Start, and early Head Start, and accredited child care programs. Our energy and emphasis has been strongly focused on supporting those non-accredited child care programs and moving through Parent Aware or into Parent Aware. This graphic is just a different look at that same data. Here you can see that the breakout of the different types of programs who participate in Parent Aware today. This slide shows that the majority of programs holding a Parent Aware rating, 41%, are family child care providers, 23% are centers, 26% are public school pre-K programs, and 10% are Head Start programs. So put a little differently, out of the 2,827 Parent Aware rated programs today, 64% are child care programs. They're either accredited or non-accredited, and 36% are publicly funded pre-K or Head Start programs.
Ms. Winston-Clatt, I guess I'm a little confused. It looked like from the prior slide that there were more center-based programs that are Parent Aware rated than there are family child care programs, but this slide seems to say the opposite, but I feel like maybe I'm just misunderstanding. Mr. Burris maybe has...
Mr. Chair, I think...
Ms. Winston-Clatt.
And members of the committee.
I must just
right,
be...
We might have our labeling...
Mr. Chair, I wonder if...
Ms. Representative Pryor.
I wonder if centers includes Head Start and public.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay, Ms. Winston-Clatt.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in this line graph, we're combining all types of center-based programs, and then the chart breaks down, and this pie chart breaks down the types of programs more distinctly.
So it sounds like, Ms. Winston-Clatt, the top line on that prior slide combines the three slices on the left side of the circle in this chart.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, correct.
Thank you. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this slide provides a glimpse of the children served in Parent Aware rated programs by program type. So here we're looking at children 0 to 5 and not yet in kindergarten served in these same rated programs. Today, almost 100,000 Minnesota children are of this age group are served in rated programs. The breakdown by program type is interesting, and it really reflects the number of children typically served in these settings. So family child care providers are obviously small and intimate settings serving fewer children than center-based settings. So just 9% of the total children served in Parent Aware rated settings are found in family child care programs currently. 12% of children are served in Head Start and early Head Start, 34% in public school pre-K, and 45% of children are served in Parent Aware rated child care centers, licensed centers. Now let's turn to look at Parent Aware programs and children served by rating level versus program type. The data on these slides also are shown in your handouts, and from this slide you can see that the majority of rated programs, 61%, have a 4-star rating. 14% are 3-star, 15% are 2-star, and 11% are 1-star. Again, here we see the impact of our accelerated and automatic rating pathways because those pathways lead to a 4-star rating. But it's also significant, but there also is a significant number of non-accredited child care programs who have worked hard to achieve a 4-star rating.
Ms. Swenson-Cloud, we have a question from Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a breakdown of the types that are rated in those stars? So, for example, government programs versus centers versus family child care.
Ms. Swenson-Cloud or Ms. Topp?
Mr. Chair, Representative. Mr. Chair, Representative, actually with me at this moment, I have the breakdown of non-accredited centers versus non-accredited family child care. I realize that doesn't go quite to your question. I'm happy to share this with you now, but we could follow up with that information more broadly.
Representative Franson.
Thank you. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see in the 4 stars just that breakdown and the same going all the way down, just to see like how many government programs are 4-star versus the private industry that might have less stars.
Ms. Swenson-Cloud.
Mr. Chair and Representative Franson will be happy to get that information to you.
Ms. Swenson-Cloud, is it, might it be a right assumption, so that those paths, the automatic paths, et cetera, described earlier, seem like they then lead to 3- or 4-star rating, if I'm understanding you?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, they actually do lead to a 4-star rating. They are, that is the only star level that those pathways lead to.
So we certainly would want the data, but it sounds like it might be a safe assumption that proportionally speaking, it's going to be more of those larger programs, public programs or centers on that 4-star level versus disproportionately more of those versus in the lower levels, if I'm understanding Representative Franson's question and what you're saying correctly. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that is correct. Okay. And perhaps it would be helpful to emphasize an earlier point Ms. Topp made when describing these pathways. The automatic and accelerated pathways are present because we indeed know through careful crosswalking of standards and measures that the measures that public school pre-K and Head Start programs and accredited child care programs already must meet through those other avenues are equivalent or greater than the Parent Aware 4-star rating for the child care programs that must go through the full rating pathway. So we're recognizing through those accelerated and automatic pathways the quality standards that those programs must already meet, and not requiring an additional work to go through that pathway. This is, to varying degrees, an approach that many states take, but there are also distinct differences across states.
And Representative Franson.
But when it comes to the voluntary pre-K programs, in statute, there's a list of things that those VPK programs need to follow. The program signs off on that. And says, yes, indeed, we are doing this. They're given a 4-star rating. However, there is really no follow-up to that. It's based on the honor system. Meanwhile, the private industry has to go through a bunch of hoops, paperwork, in order to get an increase in that CCAP funding. And many providers just don't see the benefit that the Parent Aware system has based on the hoops that they have to jump through, and they don't need the government stamp of approval when it's the families themselves that are giving that approval. Many of them have wait lists that are years long, and so no matter, but then the government programs are, yep, follow this list and statute, you're given a 4-star rating, and the playing field is extremely uneven when it comes to the private industry versus the government programs. And then I think it does a disservice to the entire industry as a general rule.
Thank you. And can you comment on the Is it that there is no follow-up? Or can you just describe what the public school setting, is the local school district involved in some way? Or sort of how does that work just on that piece?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Franson, I think that having a Department of Education representative respond to that question would be provide you with the fullest explanation of how VPK, voluntary pre-K programs, are monitored. But the local school district does indeed, by law, have is required to have oversight of the voluntary pre-K and school readiness programs in their districts, ensuring that they do meet the standards in law. We recognize a different approach to more of a local level, school district level monitoring approach than Parent Aware offers to child care programs going through the full rating process. But similar to child care programs that seek a national accreditation, there is a different entity than the Department of Human Services through Parent Aware, recognizing the quality of programs that don't go through the full rating process.
Okay, thank you. So please, it sounds like you just have a slide or two left.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. This pie chart reflects the number of children served in Parent Aware rated programs by, again, star level. So, not surprisingly, given the information we just talked about, the vast majority of children served in Parent Aware rated programs are in four-star rated programs.
And Ms. Swenson-Clad, comparing those two slides, it seems like this reinforces Representative Franson's question or point that it tends to be the bigger programs that are higher rated because it's a bigger percentage of kids than it is programs, which would imply it's the bigger programs that are having the higher ratings. Am I reading those charts right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
When I presented briefly to you on January 29th, I mentioned this metric that the Department of Human Services tracks closely related to the percentage of children receiving CCAP ages 0 to 5 and not yet in kindergarten who are served in Parent Aware rated programs. So this is a different look at the reach of Parent Aware today. In 2018, we reached 54% of CCAP children served in Parent Aware rated programs, up from 34% in 2012. And with our partners and stakeholders, we have set a goal of reaching 65% of CCAP children 0 to 5 in Parent Aware rated programs by 2021. We are hopeful that this is achievable with our current resources. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is our final slide on data. Again, found in your fact sheet, in one of your fact sheets titled Parent Aware Rated DHS Licensed Programs by County. DHS and our partners have been attending very closely to the county level participation rates in Parent Aware because we are a relatively new program in operation statewide for just a few years and for which, again, participation is voluntary. So tracking this county level data helps us to see that, one, counties that came on board earlier in that statewide expansion period do have higher rates of participation today. And it also helps us and our grantees see where we need to target resources and energy for recruitment and support. Achieving a participation rate of 25% in every county is another benchmark we've set for ourselves to drive our efforts. So highlights of this county level data include that we see that 18 counties in Minnesota do still have a participation rate among these licensed programs eligible for ratings of 10% or lower. But we have 49 counties at 25% of or higher. We do have two counties that currently have no rated licensed child care programs, Lucky Parle and Swift Counties. But we do see some license-exempt rated programs in these counties, so there is some choice of a highly rated program for parents in those communities. And we were happy to see this year that Lucky Parle has two programs, two licensed child care programs participating in the current Parent Aware cohort. So they'll receive ratings in mid-2019.
Looks like you're all done. If I'm understanding, looks like you've got your thank you slide. And so, confirming that number will be down to one county then when the Lucky Parle provider goes through. So we have a question for Representative France, and then kick us off.
So I am wondering, is it, you know, because of this unfair playing field between the government programs and the private sector, is it possible that we could have in statute for the private sector, here's the guidelines you need to reach, sign off on this that says, for sure, this is what I'm doing, and we will give you a 4-star rating to make it a little bit more fair for the private sector? Or why not?
Comments.
Why are the two treated so differently?
Ms. Swenson-Klatt or Ms. Topp?
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, if such standards were inserted into statute, I would imagine a conversation would need to occur about how we would have evidence that programs were meeting those standards, and that conversation would need to play out in the legislative realm about what would be acceptable ways to monitor programs meeting those standards.
Representative Franson.
The slideshow has wrapped up, are there any providers from the private sector here that are willing to testify or that can give their comments? I feel like we're doing all these overviews, right? But we're not getting actually any input from the industry that is affected, and we have not had any public testimony since this committee has started.
So, Representative Franson, we did solicit input, and I think nobody decided to provide it on the bills that we heard, and so we certainly will as we're hearing proposals. What we've been doing is a series of briefings from agencies. My concern is that as we open that up, you get all sorts of folks who might be providing information about, as we're getting these general overviews, and the thought is to lay just the knowledge foundation. Certainly, as we're hearing specific proposals, absolutely, we want to have public testimony, as we did on, as we solicited on Tuesday, and certainly will with any specific proposals. So I also want to make sure, too, I know that there are a bunch of questions that folks have, so I want to make sure we do that as well. But Representative Franson.
No, and I appreciate your answer. However, a lot of proposals come from the public, or what we're doing here, the overview, but when the public actually can provide input on what we're doing as well, so that members here, if there's an idea to enhance it, make it better, to change or tweak, we can get those at the same time as the overview. Otherwise, those individuals are not able to give their input if it's just for a bill proposal that has absolutely nothing to do with their idea.
And Representative Francis, a reminder that any one of us can introduce a bill, and all of our information is public, and members of the public certainly who have specific proposals on any of these topics should absolutely be talking to each one of us and introducing and asking us to introduce bills, and each one of us can choose to do that and then go through the legislative process. What we've been doing these past bunch of weeks is just getting just the understanding of how are these programs that we've been putting money in, just functionally, how do they work in terms of the sort of the statutory execution? So certainly there's lots of information, and I know that on each of the briefings we've received, there are all kinds of folks who would have all sorts of opinions from various perspectives. And so that's what we do, the legislative process. So Representative Franson.
Well, I understand that, but the actual individuals with the boots on the ground actually understand how this is affecting their businesses as well. We're not getting that input as well.
And understood. And I really would encourage, as members of the public have information to provide, to be contacting each of us and to make sure that then if folks have proposals such as the one that you referenced, for example, setting standards in statute, that can come out as a proposal. And then we can consider in the legislative process. So we're taking more time on briefings than some other committees because we want to make sure that we have just this concrete information from the agencies, but there's lots of information all around the state on each of the topics we've talked about, and so that's where we have to have a dialogue with the public. So we've got a representative, we'll go through a few other folks, and then if Representative Franson has other things, we've got Representative Cortiza Witun was next in line, then we'll Representative Heintzman and Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just hopeful that you could detail a little bit about the recruitment process, as you mentioned, the different percentages, and as we try to increase the number of programs, both private providers as well as center-based government-funded programs across the state. What sort of outreach do we do to those providers, specifically private businesses?
Looks like Ms. Topp is going to be answering that.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have dedicated positions in the child care aware system that are responsible for recruiting licensed non-accredited child care into parent aware. So they hold recruitment events in local communities, talk to programs about what their goals are, lay out the benefits, and help show programs how to sign up if they're interested. So we have staff that perform that function.
Ms. Cortiza-Witun.
Thank you. So they actually travel the state and they're meeting with people in their local area, so there's not the distance of an issue or having for them having to reach out and kind of do a little bit more of the heavy lifting on their own.
Ms. Topp.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, there are about... I'm trying to remember the exact number, but there are recruiters in each of the child care districts. So there's either five or six recruiters in the state. So I just wanted to note that, yes, they do drive around. But, there's not one in every community, but they have a region that they're responsible for, if that helps answer your question.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just in referencing the conversation with Representative Franzen a moment ago, I heard you say something. I just want a clarification. I thought I heard you say that anyone can drop a bill, then we'd be taking public testimony relative to the subject, the bill itself. And I'm just wondering, does that mean that you're going to be hearing any bills that we would drop?
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Heintzman. So, to confirm, because you obviously know this, but confirm for the public, so each one of us has the ability to introduce any bill that we want, and then there's a series of processes that go on. The bill is introduced on the House floor, it gets assigned to a committee, and then the committee chair decides different bills to give hearings to. We are now well above 1,000 bills. So no, not every bill will be getting a hearing in this committee or in any committee. But in order to become law, a bill has to have a hearing. There has to be that opportunity for public input. And when that hearing occurs, absolutely we want to be hearing input from the public. So what I'd say is any member can introduce a bill, and if a bill is going to be on that path to becoming law, absolutely folks have the chance to be providing input on that bill and saying this is a good idea or this is a lousy idea and another idea would be a better idea. Thanks for the clarification, Representative Heintzman.
I appreciate the clarification. And so the public that might be listening, hopefully they understand that while the chair had mentioned that any bill could be dropped, that legislation may or may not get heard, and the public may or may not have input in regard to the subject that's in the bill. And if there were people in the audience today, I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that nobody would want to follow up today and have some kind of comment relative to the testimony, but I'm assuming if somebody did have a question or want to add input, you're saying that wouldn't be allowed today.
So right now, the purpose of today's briefing, as the other ones, is to hear from agencies and allow members to ask questions. And I think we're going to be actually at the point where we're going to be reaching the end of the committee hearing just from members' questions. We're going to be establishing a two-year budget, and a number of these things have to do with funding, and there's other issues as well. And as those proposals go forward, there will absolutely be the opportunity for input from the public. Again, a bill can't become a law without having a hearing, having input, and the opportunity for folks to provide their thoughts. And so that's when those opportunities are. Each of the topics we've been hearing about, there is a wide variety of opinions, all sorts of folks who have an interest in them. And the way our legislative process works is that input happens via bills and proposals and reactions thereto. So that's where we're at.
So, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand correctly that Wisconsin has mandatory participation in Parent Aware?
Mr. Chair,
and Representative, as I understand it, the participation in Wisconsin is a link between child care subsidy and the quality rating and improvement system. So if your program receives child care assistance, it's what we call it in Minnesota, then you must be rated. In Young, their system is called Young Star.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So presumably they have a much higher participation rate. and it would be interesting to know if there's any comparison available between the two states or if there's a plan to look into that.
Ms. Stopp.
Mr. Chair and the committee, I don't know of a comparison off the top of my head, and I'm not aware if there are any national evaluations that are looking at it. So I guess right now I don't know of any plans for one, and I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Okay. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a thought, having a larger pool to see if their outcomes are improved or just a comparison. Something to consider.
Ms. Stopp, any comment on that, or Ms. Swenson-Clatt? No. Representative Franson.
To that, before I go into my colleague's comments about bills, I think that the private industry is really sick and tired of government pushing more mandates on them, and they would not appreciate it being mandatory in order to take our lowest income wage earners in the state having to be, you have to be part of Parent Aware in order to take those kids. You know, the best quality determinant is a parent themselves and not a government rated program or a star from the government. But to my colleague, he was bringing up some really great questions and comments about how bill hearings are going to go and if the public wants input. They have to introduce a bill, and possibly that bill may get heard. Mr. Chair, is it your intention, or how do you plan on divvying out what bills get heard by party affiliation? Is it going to be each party gets the equal number of bills that's going to be before the committee, or is it going to be, based on the amount per side that we have? Could you explain how that works so my team here can figure out how we're going to package things?
Thank you, Representative Franson. So I'm looking at, and the committee's looking at, this broad agenda, right? Prenatal to preschool, child care, et cetera. And so I'm really going to be looking at each of the proposals on their merits and not assessing based on partisanship and based on their merits. And so as it's been each of the each session that we've had, that's how that works. So that's my plan. But thank you. Question that I wanted to ask. I know that the Parent Aware came out of more of a preschool focus. At least that's my understanding, and you maybe tell me if that's not correct. But are there particular steps being taken to invest in quality care for infants and toddlers in particular, or is there not so much of a need for that distinction? Just if you can comment on that age difference. Ms. Swenson-Clatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Parent Aware is indeed the measures of quality. Those standards and indicators are intended to support kindergarten readiness best practices for that whole age range of 0 to 5. I think you're right to discern that they're at the beginning of the quality rating and improvement system planning, that there was an emphasis on preschool best practices. That's in part because the research is stronger nationally in that area, but the research on best practices for infants and toddlers, I think, has been rapidly growing. So it is our strong interest and intent, because of a commitment to continuous quality improvement and to constantly revisiting the research basis and indeed supported by input from providers and parents, that we look ahead to ways in which we might strengthen the standards and indicators in, for parent aware, for instance, programs serving infants and toddlers as well. One note on that front is that the class observation tool used in child care centers who want to seek a 3 or 4 star rating is currently only carried out in preschool classrooms. It's not actually validated in, for use in infant and toddler classrooms, so we lack nationally, but are looking, and many partners across the nation are looking at ways in which to appropriately capture those important child and adult interactions in infant and toddler classrooms. We also lack a measure of observation that is really suitable for family child care providers. And that's, I think, a well-known gap nationally in how quality rating and improvement systems can both help support quality in family child care settings and also and that are so unique because they're serving a multi-age group of children.
I guess along those lines, I'd be interested in the breakdown of star rating, et cetera, based on age, and just would wonder if maybe the there are more 3 and 4 star rated programs, especially, I guess, if there's voluntary pre-K and school readiness that tend to be older kids as well, a breakdown from by age, and suspecting that in programs that serve or providers that serve infants and toddlers, there may well be a lower percentage that are rated and with a lower rating than others. I don't know if that seems consistent to you, and if you could provide that information afterwards. Comment from
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm not 100% certain we have that age breakdown, but we'll go back and check and provide it to you if we do.
And Ms. Winston-Clyde, is turnover a factor in the quality assessment? I'm just thinking that we know because of low ages, and then depending on the program or the provider, there can be quite a lot of turnover. Is that a factor that's taken into account when assessing quality? Ms. Topp.
Mr. Chair and the committee, so programs, that's a great question. When programs are rated, it's a point in time rated, and they're rated on the staff that are currently employed at the time of rating. Ratings last for 2 years. And then they, when that 2 years is up, the rating expires, and the program, if it chooses to re-rate, is rated on the staff that are employed at the time of rating. So.
Okay. And is the preschool development grant that we learned about, will that have a connection to this parent aware work? Ms. Winston-Clatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it does, both specifically and broadly. The needs assessment and strategic planning phases of the that are funded by the preschool development grant, we expect and hope that those will pull in feedback and new insights into this kind of initiative, a quality rating improvement system that's a part of the landscape of the early childhood system in Minnesota, and hope for robust conversation with communities around the state. More specifically, we are going to be using a small portion of the preschool development grant funding to look at some specific future directions for parent-aware standards and indicators that we named and are noted in a public report that came out in 2017 describing the remodeled standards and indicators for parent aware. So we'll be using some of the planning grant funds to help us get a jump start on how to think ahead about those future directions.
Okay, thank you. Now we're almost out of time. Are there any other questions that members have? Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for being here today. I appreciate the testimony. And apologize for some car issues, but so a couple of questions quickly, and I'll try to queue them up quickly because I know we're running short on time. But as part of the parent aware, and let me just say, correct this statement for me, they do, in fact, I assume as part of that process, share innovations, ideas, research on the best childcare methods as part of that process. Is that accurate?
Ms. Swenson-Klatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, by they, do you mean childcare providers themselves?
No, as part of the Parent Aware program, in order to become certified, I'm assuming that Parent Aware is helping to educate and train their providers, private or public, on best practices, new research on brain development, those kinds of things, right?
Ms. Swenson-Klatt, I should say we just have just about a minute left here, so Ms. Swenson-Klatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, through the coaching process that Ms. Topp described, both prior to a rating and even in preparing the rating, those coaches are indeed sharing best practices and providing information to the child care providers going through that process. And there are the training requirements also embedded in Parent Aware that are also another avenue for learning new knowledge, skills, and abilities that contribute to those best practices.
Representative Bonner, just one question.
Yes. And then quickly a question and a follow-up to that. What is the percentage of, do we know the percentage of private providers that are receiving state dollars currently? I didn't see that in the packet.
Ms. Swenson-Klatt, that may be a slightly different question. Ms. Swenson-Klatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the share of private child care businesses receiving child care assistance funding, I do not know that percentage off the top of my head, but we can provide that to you.
Okay. Representative Bonner?
The reason I ask is, I mean, I guess I'm just curious because the point was brought up about, and I understand that, you know, I have several folks that I know who are actually in the private child care industry. And I do know that some of the regulations can sometimes be a little bit onerous. I appreciate that. I understand that. But as far as the Parent Aware system is concerned, I guess my thought is this. If we are, as a state, putting dollars into these providers, we are paying them, it feels like having some idea of the return on investment that we're getting and the value that's being provided for our dollars makes good sense. So I guess that's where I was headed with that. I was just trying to understand how we understand the return on the investment that the state is making. Because obviously, you know, we have limited funds here in the state, and we want to make sure we spend them wisely.
So that may tee up Representative Heintzman a conversation when a bill comes before us. So that may Representative Bonner, thank you for that comment. That may tee up a conversation. Thank you to our testifiers, and again, folks, be in touch. Oh, special announcement. Good point. The field hearing has had to be rescheduled to March 1st. We'll send a note out about that. So March 1st, Friday, March 1st, still in St. Cloud, but not Friday the 22nd. And my apologies for that. And with that, we are adjourned.